Hey everyone, today's guest is Chris Freeman, rhythm guitarist and backing vocalist for the Lansing, Michigan punk rock band, Hot Mulligan. Together we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite hit, Equip Sunglasses, taken from their 2020 album, You'll Be Fine. I had the pleasure of touring with Hot Mulligan in the fall of 2021, and the amount of ground these guys have covered in the last 2 years has been nothing short of phenomenal. This band is blowing up big time due to songs such as Equip Sunglasses. Chris said that this one was demoed very quickly and passed off to the rest of the band, who were immediately impressed. So impressed that they knew it was going to be a featured single and focal point of the record, even before recording the final product. Producer Brent Romnes, who also engineered and mixed the album, totally crushes it here. Chris said that Brett is like the fifth member of the band. He lets them be themselves and strives to capture that feel, energy, and passion, which he perfectly crafted here. So for all this and some more cowbell, buckle up, partner, it's about to get wild.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Well, hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm great, Chris. How are you doing?
Good. It's a Chris trifecta today. Me, you, and Chris Fafalius here. We've had a Chris on before. It gets a little confusing, but we're good. How are you?
You know, enjoying my sweet morning.
Yeah? Where are you living now? Because I want to say, did we talk about the, you know, me being from Michigan and you being from Michigan as well when we were on the road together?
You know, I don't know if we got there.
I don't think we got there either. So now, are you in California now?
I am.
Okay. So you're not in Lansing, the bustling metropolis of Lansing, Michigan.
Yeah. All one street of excitement.
You ever get over to Flint?
Oh, I've been over there.
I'm being facetious. So I was born in Novi.
Okay.
Or excuse me, born in Livonia. I grew up in Novi. But anyway, yeah, we were on the road together in 2021, late August, all of September and part of October. You guys were out with us in Newfound Glory. It was our first thing we did out of the pandemic. It was probably yours as well, right?
Yep, ditto.
Yeah. And it was cool to see. I kept hearing a buzz on this band, Hot Mulligan. And next thing I know, they're out on the Newfound Glory Tour. And if there's one thing I can say about Newfound and Chad Gilbert in particular, he's always had his pulse on what's bubbling and what's next and what's coming up. I didn't think for the life of me, though, seeing you 2 years ago, and this is no disrespect to you or the band, where you went from there to now, it's insane. The amount of ground that you guys have covered, selling out places like House of Blues in Boston. Congratulations, man. I'm happy for you guys.
Thanks, dude. I appreciate that.
It's cool to see because, you know, our crowd and Newfound Glory's crowd is an older crowd. So to go out there, you know, yeah, you got the people, you know, that I think you got a good reaction, but you weren't in front of your own crowd. I could imagine it's nuts. And I went and watched some YouTube videos and got to see your crowd and how much they love you guys.
Yeah, that tour was like pretty important for us because like you said, it definitely wasn't our own crowd, but nowadays we do have kind of that older fan base. And I think that tour is part of one of those reasons. I think it's sick if you're a younger band and you can win over the older people who probably aren't necessarily looking for new artists all the time.
Right. And I always kind of like that challenge. I call it preaching to the converted. We get out in front of the same audience all the time. You know, you got to get up in front of new people. And sometimes that's scary. We've been in front of an audience before going, well, I don't know how this is going to go, you know, and you start to get a little intimidated in your head and you can't. You just got to go out and do what you do.
Right.
So, and I was looking and noticed that this is also happening in England and Europe as well with you. It's just this groundswell that's happening. Have you made it over to Australia or Japan yet?
No, we got our first Australian headliner coming up in, I want to say it's February, maybe it's March.
Okay.
No plans for Japan right now, but I know we're talking about it with the team and stuff, trying to get over there.
Have you ever been to Australia?
No.
Oh, buddy. I'm stoked for you. You're gonna have a ball, and you will get to Japan with what's going on with you guys. Little bit about the band. You released two EPs before signing to No Sleep in 2017. Your debut album, Pilot, was on No Sleep in 2018. And in 2020, right at the start of the world shutting down, you guys released your second record, You'll Be Fine. And it features the song, Equip Sunglasses, that we're going to be talking about today, which is so funny because this song was new basically when we were touring with you guys a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, when I asked you about what song, you immediately picked this one.
Yeah.
And I went, it's got a ton of views, ton of plays on Spotify, ton of views on YouTube and a couple other places. But what is it about this track, do you think, that gets the crowd going? Why do they relate so hard to it? Because again, I watched some live videos and people are going nuts.
Yeah, I think the vocal melody has a big part to do with it, but I think we've got a lot of songs with great vocal melodies, but it's also the lead guitar part is a part I've noticed, even especially those Europeans, like they sing the riff when it comes.
Yes.
So that's a good sign, especially for like maybe not people who have English as their first language. Like if English is a second language and they're still singing the guitar part, I think that's a good sign for if the song is catchy and stuck in your head. And then it's also like one of our like poppiest in terms of like danceability, I suppose. That chorus has the 16th note like
sure.
thing going on, kind of like some 1975 or some like 80s
okay yeah
stuff. Yeah. And then I think that initial vocal, when the first vocal comes in, he's just like screaming over what is really like a medium forte like drum thing. Like it's not really loud. You wouldn't expect, if you don't know the band, that the first thing you hear is Tate's barking at you.
Well, we're gonna get there in a second. We're gonna comb through this thing. I want to talk about a couple more things. Do you remember writing Equip Sunglasses, and was it specifically for the record You'll Be Fine, or was this a holdover from the first album?
Yeah, I remember it actually super clearly. It was for You'll Be Fine. At the time, we had enough songs written minus some vocals to go do our record, but we felt like we needed like another single or something. So we did like one more writing session probably a couple weeks before we went to go record. And normally we were jamming in my parents' basement, like full loud drums or whatever. And I just moved into an apartment, so I had an electric drum kit set up, and the guys came over, and I had these like 3-inch baby studio monitors that we were running our guitars through, and Logic with just like the stock Logic amp sims or whatever. And we were just jamming like quiet mode.
How different was the demo to the finished product?
Honestly, like it's about the same. I think we've finished up the song, like just demoing it, and then we were like, cool. And then got to the studio, and even we're telling our producer, like, this is the one. We don't need to change anything about it. Like, this is the song.
Wow. You were that confident about it, even at that stage.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And real quick, not to cut you off, speaking of your producer, I'm familiar with Mr. Brett Romnes, okay? This guy is also known as The Rat. And we had Vinny from I Am the Avalanche on the show, breaking down Brooklyn Dodgers. And that was like one of the first records, if not the first record that Brett had done. And I was blown away. It was the first project. I'm like, this is the first thing he did. It sounds absolutely incredible. And he did it again here. What's it like working with him? This record sounds awesome.
Dude, it's incredible working with him. I know some bands go in and they want like the producer to really maybe take the reins and like really form the song. But working with him, it's not that. He just feels like an extension of the band, and he's never like telling us like, oh, like I think you should do this, or this would be better, or this is the move. And he speaks up like only if we've like hit a wall or something. And other than that, he lets us do our whole thing. And if we got like electronic production elements we've done in the demos, he's like, you know, just send me those stems and I'll drop them in, instead of him like redoing it and being like, no, like I know how to do it better. Like he just lets us run wild with it. It's sick.
I love producers that do that. There's so many times. I read a recently Butch Walker did a Green Day record and Billy brought him a recording and he's like, okay, so this is going to go on the record, right? It's a great song. And Billy was like, well, yeah, it's going to go on the record. He's like, well, what am I going to do to this? It's already there. And the demo they actually took and just remixed it. And that ended up being, so I respect a producer that can do that. That can get out of their own way and say, you know what, why am I going to try to muck something up here? That's already great. So that's really cool that Brett does that.
Yeah. And then it's even like when we do get stuck or something too, he's not the type of guy to tell you what to do, but he gives you a new way of thinking to let you find out what you do yourself with this new approach, which I really appreciate as an artist and songwriter.
That's awesome. Well, before we get into the song, do you have the demo? And don't stress out over this, but if you could send us the demo, we'd like to play a snippet of it if we could.
Okay. Yeah, I should have the demo laying around actually.
The song is 2:43. The song's called Equip Sunglasses. And I know how to use the word equip or equipped in a sentence, but I'm sitting there trying to define it in my head, and I actually had to look it up. Equip, supply with the necessary items for a particular purpose. So you got to equip yourself with your sunglasses. We got a 4-bar intro off the top. It's just drums. On bar 4, panned left, there's a guitar that gives us a ja-junk, which leads things into verse 1. Cool use of some sus and diminished chords here, which is interesting when those octaves come in later, because the way those suses play off those octaves is gnarly.
Yeah. We play in this open tuning D-A-C-G-C-E, which is like a sus chord on its own. And we pretty much just change, in this song anyways, we pretty much just change the two root notes and like let the rest of the strings ring the whole time.
Ah, you just gave me your secret, because here I am screwing around trying to figure this out last night, and I was getting some of it. My fingers are all over the... Looked like I had a bad case of arthritis, so that's really cool. So, right out of this leads right into verse 1, and I'm going to read these lyrics, and I know that your singer, Nathan Sanville, you call him Tades, yep. I know he wrote the lyrics here, but I'd like to talk about them and kind of break them down with you if we could. Head on a pike, plain and vacant tonight, as you cry through your phone. Let the masses support all the hate that you spit. Keep a mouthful of shit. See your smile out at town, and our shirt that you sport. Woe's me. I think it's woes, you know, W-O-E apostrophe S. That's what I take, and it means woe is me. Is that what you would take?
Yeah, that's how I interpret it as well.
Okay, so woe is me. So what's going on here lyrically, and... when you wrote the song, the music to this, did you have any melodies or any lyrical ideas, or do you leave that up to Tades to comb through and do?
Sometimes I have ideas, but this song, I did not. We were just jamming, and he started spitballing. And the whole song is him kind of just like dunking on haters, really. Telling them to go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I like this song. Blanking. I had another one about, it's almost like young youth high school type rebellion. And, you know, that stuff follows you through life. So this isn't necessarily a young person's song, but I love these lyrics. It's an impassioned, screamy vocal that comes in right off the top here on verse 1 with that single guitar and the drums. Nice, closed, tight hi-hat continues here from the intro. I love the sparseness here. Very open and honest sounding in this part. And in my notes, I had written, because I was thinking about this band, I want to get them on the podcast. Do you remember a band called Local H?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Nowhere else in the song reminds me of them except this first verse. And I love the sparseness. It's just that guitar and just that drum with the vocal. And it sounds honest and open. Was that the idea from the get-go with the demo, or did you have other stuff here, bass and things?
Yeah, from the get-go, it just started like that with just the guitar and the drums and the vocal. Yeah. But I don't think we were like necessarily aimed to make it sparse in comparison. We're just, you know, still a younger band. So like that is like our instrumentation, and, you know, yeah, didn't really actually put a second thought into that. It's just how it happens.
That's interesting. And that's really cool, because I would have never done that on my first two or three records, kept something that sparse. It just wasn't the animal that my band is. That's something that I might want to do now. Like, let's save the chorus or the pre-chorus where it gets heavier. Let's keep the verse sparse. But I think for a younger band that sometimes things like that are cool, because when you're younger in bands with a bunch of, you know, a lot of times guys in your case, egos will take over. It's like, well, I want to play here. I want to play over this part. I want to play over this part. And I like when there's restraint and the song comes first.
Yeah.
The pre-chorus one comes right off of verse one.
He's got the glass. Keep your ear to the glass. Was me.
Eavesdrop in class, keep your ear to the glass, woe's me. So you get the lyric, woe's me again. And I'm considering this the pre-chorus, not part of the verse, because right off the verse, it's a 16-bar pre-chorus, I'm calling it, fairly long, but what a great setup here. Bass guitar and another guitar panned off right join the party, along with a super catchy guitar lick. It's the hook, I'm calling it, of this song. Kind of chorus and flangey. Was that lick doubled?
Yeah, that's doubled up, and it's got like octave pedal on it. I think maybe two or three octaves on there.
It does sound a little synthy, kind of dancey. You know, you talked about dance. I don't know if that was intentional, but it kind of makes me feel that way with that, the way the tonality is.
Yeah. I've always been into synths and stuff like that. I think the octave idea was Ryan's part, our other guitarist, and he's into definitely some more like creative guitar effects and stuff like that, and people who play like that for maybe like a whole song and stuff.
Well, what I love about it is all 16 bars you're getting this guitar lick, but on bar five, that's when the vocals come in. And this part, eavesdrop in class, keep your ear to the glass, woe's me. And the way that Tade sings that, the delivery and the way he said woe's me on that part in particular, it's quite possibly the catchiest part of the song. And it only happens once again later in the tune near the end, but it's brilliant. Have you ever had those songs? I love the rest of the song, but those two parts, and I've had songs before that I didn't really like the rest of the song, but there was two parts in the song that were so amazing that you would listen to the song over and over again. And I like this whole song, but that part in particular just really sticks out here. It's different. It's very cool. Got a question on bar 4 and 12 here in this pre-chorus, okay? There's a synthy sounding like hi-hat tss, off to the right, panned. It only happens twice. Tss.
Interesting.
So the drums are going, the hi-hat's coming. I'm like, what is this? It's almost jarring, and it's really cool. It's on the fourth bar right before the vocals come in, and it's on bar 12. It's great. After What Was Me, the guitar lick and the band go for another 8 bars. And again, it's just, to me, it's such an interesting setup for chorus number 1. And I doubly love it because you don't have a pre-chorus 2 in the song. It only happens later. So from an arranging standpoint, I think that's really cool. And again, I'm going to ask, up to this point, was the demo following the same arrangement?
Yep.
And now, did anybody in the band, when you brought the demo, I know you said all the guys liked it, and Brett seems more of a, you know, getting sounds guy and an engineer. It sounds like he's kind of leaving the band to do what they want. But what were people interjecting at this point? Like when Tades heard it, did he already have an idea what the song was going to be lyrically?
So when we got to this point in the song, and we were like jamming it the first time before it's the song, Ryan wasn't sure what to do with the lead part, and we were considering like keeping this first kind of open, or a lot of times we do this like arpeggiated lead just to like pad things out. But with this like chunky rhythm that it's got going on, the but thing, I wanted to like riff something. So I started the first part of that lead guitar just like the duh duh duh, but like I didn't get much farther than that. So I just gave Ryan the inspiration to try something like that. And then he laid the rest of it down with it, like one or two, like just jams through the progression. And it was pretty much all instantly like, yes, yep, that's exactly that. Like, don't change a thing. And I don't know if Tades was, I don't remember if he was saying anything yet. I know a lot of time writing this record, he would be like, okay, like I got something, but we wouldn't hear him do it until he's like all done. He wouldn't show us where he was in the process to maybe like work something out. He would just like, nope, like hold on, and then just come in and deliver it.
Now, I know all you guys about the same, and we toured together, we hung out a little bit, but you know, don't know you that well, but that's my impression of him. He seems guarded. He seems like, you know what, this is my lyric. Let me work on this till I get it how I want to present it. Is that a fair assumption?
Yep.
So right out of pre-chorus one, we get into chorus one, okay? It seems like so much has went on up to this point in the song, but we're only at the 36-second mark. You talked about that 16th note shuffle. The drums go to a shuffle feel here on the hi-hat. Bass, stereo guitars are playing a syncopated rhythm as octave guitars are running underneath. Those octave guitars are mixed brilliantly here, and I know Brett mixed the record as well. I love where they sit in the mix behind those stereo guitars that are kind of punching you with that syncopated rhythm.
Yeah.
Were any of those on the demo, those octaves?
Yeah, I believe the octaves were on there.
Okay, so you were already hearing that.
Yep.
See, you know, when I first started doing demos, they were just crude cassette recordings, you know, and we didn't have smartphones, and you know, you'd record on whatever you had. And then when I did get something to record on, you know, I mean, I had a 4-track and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, even when I got Pro Tools initially, I was just doing guitar and vocal demos. And then finally got to the point where, you know, in order for me to get my vision or, you know, to be fully realized, I gotta build these out a little bit more. And I found that I do that with all my demos now. But do you ever feel sometimes that, you know what, here's the basic chords of the song. The shell and the bones of this thing are great, but I don't want to put all the bells and whistles in. I want to let the rest of the band maybe do something there. Is that ever an approach?
I mean, like definitely to like start the demo, but once things fill out a little bit, I become like so invested that I'm like, all right, now imagine like maybe Brett will do this better, but I want a reverse cymbal swell here and like, like production and stuff like that. So when I'm demoing, I want to know like if Brett wasn't there, like if I could do it myself or like how close I could get and stuff. So it's like always a challenge for me to see like how pro I can make it on my own, especially at this point in our career. I was really like just trying to learn everything all the time.
Would you say that you, you know, along with Brett, of course, again, he engineered, mixed and produced the record, but you're kind of like the band's producer, it sounds like. You know, you're kind of overseeing everything. You know, yeah, people are contributing parts, but you're kind of making some of the final decisions.
Yeah, I'm normally the starter and the finisher, but you know, I don't tell anyone what to play or nothing. It's good to
It's good to hate, isn't it? Popping veins, dissonance. Draw and quarter a stranger to feel some blood on your fingers. You take away, robbery. Follow trends as a hobby. Find flaws in everything else. Because you don't like yourself. Woe is me. That's the lyric to me in the song. That right there. Find flaws in everything or in everybody else. Because you don't like yourself. Aren't we all guilty of that at some point? It's like, you know, I've felt that emotion before where, oh, this band's doing great, or this movie's, everyone wants to watch it and I don't, and I'm gonna, you know, pee on everyone's Cheerios.
Yeah, total projection. But even if you can't see that like, that's why you're doing that. I mean, a lot of the times you can't see that. Like, you're just so angry at something, but you know, you find a place of like clarity later on where you're maybe like more confident in yourself and realize some of your anger and stuff is misguided just because you didn't know like who you are.
I love lyrics like this. Eavesdrop in class, you know, most people that are in class are younger, but not necessarily. Okay. And I'm here to tell you, if anyone's a teenager listening to this, when you get older, the pettiness and the politics and all the rest of this stuff, it doesn't get any better. So these lyrics will still hold true. Something else interesting here. We don't have any harmonies in the song. The vocals here in the chorus sound double tracked. Do you recall if they were doubled?
Yep, they're doubled.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds great. On me, on woe's me, on the word me, it screamed by itself. And again, I wrote, I love that we get the hook of woe is me, not only in the verse, not only in the pre-chorus, but the chorus. That's a cool lyric. I can't recall. I'm sure someone said it like in a verse of a song, woe is me, but never is the hook sang this many times. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also interesting too, like when we talked about how it's like, is it woe is me or is it the woe apostrophe S and just tades on some like English literature type, like, because woe apostrophe S does not mean like woe is English language if you like want to get technical about it, but like you understand the expression of it. So it's like, you know, I studied English in school for a little bit, so I'm like scratching my head when I first hear that, but it's like, that's just like pure artist shit.
I've always loved ambiguity in lyrics. I've always loved, well, what does it mean to you? You know, I like that vagueness sometimes, and I think this is great. And again, that if you're going to sum up this song to me, it's those two lines there. Find flaws and everything else because you don't like yourself. It's awesome.
Hey everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more coming up with Chris Freeman after a few words from our sponsors.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we celebrate and occasionally have a laugh about those bands and artists that had one song that most people remember. Although many musicians may reject the term one-hit wonder, we beg to differ with their aversion to it, because wouldn't we all love to have a beloved hit song? On One Hit Thunder, we're joined by interesting guests from the world of music and comedy to dive into one artist each week. Our back catalog runs deep with episodes about everyone from Wild Cherry to Snow to Tag Team to Harvey Danger, and a new episode comes out every Wednesday. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your podcasts and join in on the fun. And now, back to the show.
After chorus one, we get a 16-bar reintro. The first 4 bars, the guitar is panned left, and the guitar lick hook is panned off to the right. Then the stereo guitars and the lick, which is now centered with the bass and the drums, come in for 12 more bars. On the 15th bar in this section, the guitar goes by itself, panned off left, and a really cool drum fill takes us in to verse 2.
Comply until tied to your bias. Be sure you're identified.
prisoner compliance, you'll tend to your bias. Be sure you're identical to all your peers. Keep your head low, suggestive, horror show, like clockwork, predictable, simple, then turn of a gear. It's cool, man. There's some cool, you know, the line of be sure you're identical to all your peers. And I always felt that growing up. I didn't go to a school that made you wear a uniform. You know, some of my friends did. They went to Catholic school or whatever. But there was certainly a conformity. And I found out very early on that if you didn't conform to that you were looked at as the outcast. You know, you were we called them burnouts in school, or the stoners, or the metalheads, and you know, all your different factions there. So when I read a lyric like that, you know, and they talk about peers and class. Yeah, it could be about that time period of your life. But again, this leads you forever. This takes you into adulthood. It doesn't stop there.
Yeah. No, I feel like there's definitely like conformity, and that's how you get these like subcultures, like, you know, the punks and the stoners and stuff like that. But it doesn't stop there. I'm going to say, for lack of a better term, we're going to say Hot Mulligan is like a punk rock band, you know, like guitar angst. Obviously Less Than Jake is a punk rock band, but just because you like refuse to conform to this mainstream way and you end up in this punk rock world, like it doesn't stop because you've gone to this non-conformist world. Like there's not rules, but there's like rules to punk, or like
sure,
skateboard culture and all these things that you say are like these free thinking spaces, but suddenly you do this and you're not punk, or like you can't hang here because you think that. So like even when you try to get away from it, you do end up in another spot that's got these rules.
Well, and yeah, and you guys are doing well enough now that I'm sure you've had some smack talkers back in old Lansing, Michigan, or some, oh, those guys are this or those guys are that. And you're just out there doing your thing. So it's interesting. When I researching for the episode, you guys, Hot Mulligan is a post emo band from Lansing, Michigan. I don't know if I've heard that term. I've heard post punk. I've heard emo, post emo. And I always do an intro on here. So I think I'm just going to say punk rock band from Lansing. Is that okay?
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll leave the post emo out of it. A lot of cool things happening here in verse 2. Same instrumentation as verse 1, but the stereo guitars here sound a bit bigger. Do you know if they were mixed a little louder here in verse 2? That's what it sounds like, possibly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they were mixed a little louder. And then I think it's also that juxtaposition from coming out of the first chorus. They're filtered right as you come out of the chorus with that like radio pass, or like radio.
Yes.
Hit. So that definitely helps, but I think they might be chunked up a little bit here to give that second verse some more depth.
Now on this verse, on the word identical and the next line, to all your peers, it sounds like there's super subtle, way buried back harmonies on those lines. Be sure you're identical to all your peers. Keep your head. Now, I don't know if that was a guitar lick or something in the back, or an octave that made it sound like that following it, but it's very interesting because I don't hear harmonies until that spot, and I kept listening over and over and over. And it sounds like there's harmony. If there's not, whatever's happening there is super cool.
Yeah, I don't remember if we did a harmonies there or not. I know I don't sing any live, which leads me to believe that we probably didn't do it, but maybe there was like a scratch take even, or something that's left in there. I'm not sure.
And for those listening right now, what he means by scratch take, that could either just be like something you were practicing, or it could even be, correct me if I'm wrong, something maybe taken from the initial demo you did, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't have been taken from the demo in this instance, but in other songs, definitely something like that.
Right after the line, keep your head low, there's a high-pitched guitar that comes in panned hard right. It almost sounds like a synth. It's awesome. Keep your head low, suggested, or our show like
clockwork. Dude, you're catching up on some things that I've been lost in time for me.
I've made the joke before on the show. What, you don't sit around and listen to your own stuff? Come on, you didn't listen to it this morning?
I do it from time to time. I go in, but maybe I'm not listening that critically sometimes.
Well, I'm telling you that there's a high-pitched guitar that's panned hard right, Chris, that comes in here, and it follows through for the rest of the verse. Also, from that lyric, keep your head low until the last lyric, then turn of the gear. The vocals here are overdubbed as the previous line holds out underneath. It makes this part sound really urgent and way different than verse one. I think that's awesome, the overlapping.
Yeah. I think we just realized that was a good part to do a trade-off when we hadn't done any vocal trade-offs on this song yet. And that's something we like to do a lot, is trade-off between Tates and I.
Is that you singing in that? So that's you and him in that section?
Yep.
Okay, now are you singing anywhere else in this?
That's where my vocals come in the song, and then I sing in the bridge too.
Okay. So yes, I thought there was a couple things going on here, because that was my next question. I've done that before where you've overdubbed stuff. Now you got to go sing it live. And you're like, how do you do it? You know, you got to have someone else in the band. And in this case, you can cover the part or do the part because it's you.
Yeah, we try to avoid anything that would, like, you couldn't do the bass of it live. Like, if there's a part where it's like, I'm going to need you to sing this live, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to sing it on the record then. It's not going to be, we're not going to make it different.
Yeah, I love that. We've always held on to that because, you know, first and foremost, we're a live band. So if we can't do it live, we always kind of typically shied away from it. Right out of verse two, talked about this a little bit ago, but we don't get a pre-chorus here. I love it. I absolutely love that you don't go there, but we do get it later because that melody line, I'm telling you, it's absolute gold. It's the thing that sticks out. I cannot get that part out of my head. But why didn't you go to a pre-chorus here?
Don't bore us. Get to the chorus.
Don't bore us. Get to the chorus. Well, I kind of think that you had a pretty long reintro of 16 bars after chorus one. That part's awesome. It's great what is going on there. But by the time you get to the end of verse two, you got to hit that chorus. I think you made the right call and it's perfect. Well, again, chorus two, same instrumentation as chorus one, same lyrics, not hearing any harmonies. We are getting that double tracked vocal. And then we get into another 16 bars of a guitar solo. Drums, bass, and stereo guitars are in. The stereo guitars go to a strumming pattern here. The solo is reminiscent of the main guitar hook a bit, but just in feel, in the congruity of the part. Drums get loud on the crash here, and a 16th note tambourine comes in this part. Really makes the part move.
I love that 16th note tambourine shit.
Yeah, no, it's I talk about that a lot. I laugh because I remember, I want to say it was Lagwagon put a tambourine on something years ago and people were calling them sellouts. This is like in the mid 90s. It's like, you can't do that as a punk band, you know? And something as simple as a 16th note tambourine, what that does to a part. And I love that it runs for the rest of the song too, that it doesn't come out. And I think that's really cool. After this 16 bar guitar solo, we go into the bridge. It's getting harder not to lose myself when you clearly wanted someone else. Staying awake because I never feel safe at home. Double check the locks and hide my phone. Try to drink away peripheral ghosts. Turn out the lights, it's my fault. I'm never alone. And man, did that line hit me. Try to drink away peripheral ghosts. I felt that. Yeah. I've been out not feeling right. Got broke up with or something. And you just, you don't want to feel what you're feeling in that moment. And then you wake up the next day and you went, it's still there.
Yep.
That line really stuck. I love what's happening here. Imagery wise, could you expound on these lyrics a little bit? What's happening?
Yeah. So I think that's Tade's saying, like, he's put his all into these, the art and the lyrics and stuff like this. And, you know, the song is about like dunking on haters and stuff, but it's kind of like dunking on haters who are fans of the band, but then are like holding you to some standard you didn't tell them that, like, you know, we're not out here trying to say like we're role models or like God or
yeah,
how to think. But then these, some people think like you owe them something more than the art that you've given them when you didn't ask for that. So he's saying like, he feels like he's losing himself because he doesn't know like to please them or not, or to like stick to his guns and stuff. And when he resolves with, it's my fault, I'm never alone, like he's saying he brought this on himself by, you know, giving the songs and like choosing to continue to tour and put himself out there in that way.
Being vulnerable. That's ultimately what it is. You're putting yourself out there. I love what you said about that, about the fans that put you in this box. It was once said, I think they use Green Day as an example, but you know, they're out playing a 20,000 person arena. There's probably 1,000 or 1,500 people there that hate Green Day online and to their friends, and they're not punk enough anymore, but they still bought a ticket to the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times you'll get those closet haters, but they're still there, and that's all that matters. A lot of cool instrumentation going on in the bridge. A great octave guitar comes in that's loosely mimicking the melody line here. I really, really like that. That 16th note tambourine is still with us, and the vocals are once again overdubbed and hanging underneath the next vocal, which is awesome. I'm also hearing in here, between you guys singing, it almost sounds like there are a couple, and I've listened a bunch of times, it's hard to discern, but there's like every third word or fourth word, like you'll hear a quick harmony that'll happen there. And I love that. It sounds very ragtag. It doesn't sound super tight, but I think it's meant to sound that way.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right about that.
Okay, very cool. And you know, how precious are you with that when you're in doing the vocals? If you're like, it's rubbing a little bit, but like it's got energy and it sounds real.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of times if you got a lead vocalist and the second guy, when the lead vocalist wants harmonies on their part, they'll have the lead vocalist harmonize with themselves, you know, to make it the same so that like the vowel sounds and everything are the same. But when we do it, Tades will sing the lead and I'll sing the harmony, because when we do it live, that's how it's going to be. And in the start of the band, we get told like, no, like you don't do it, like it's going to sound wrong, but it's like, but that's how it sounds. So that's how we want to do it. So some of those things just don't line up perfect because we got different voices and we're harmonizing over the other thing. And then there's also parts that are just like lack of experience in doing harmonies or like learning all the time, where sometimes you realize a note is unison. And then you find out like where the right note is, but it sounds like too theatrical to like dip down there. So we're like, oh, fuck it, man. If we sing the same note, then I guess we do.
I love that you brought that up. No one's ever talked about it on the show. That is so awesome. What you just said about being young and not really know. I'm going to tell you something. I got double the life on you here. And I'm telling you straight up that I still have a really hard time with the harmonies and picking that one note. Like you said, like, oh, this is unison. Let's change it to this note. Like it just sticks out like a sore thumb. And let's not discount the power of unison, you know, that the gang vocals and what that can do. And sometimes you don't need the harmony. Just lay off here. Just make it in unison. It sounds tougher.
Yep.
Right on. Well, chorus three, man, this chorus sounds really big. The tambourine is in on chorus three, which makes this chorus sound faster than the other ones. It's the illusion of that tambo. It just keeps it going there. The drum beat is way more open here. Lots of double snares that come in on this part. And the stereo guitars are more strummed here. They're not as syncopated. Take away robbery, follow trenches, a hobby, fight, fight. on the line to feel some blood on your fingers. There's a guitar harmonic, doo-doo, panned off to the left that happens there. Your fingers take away
robbery. Interesting.
So I got to ask you about that. You gave me the deer in the headlights look here. Like you don't know what I'm talking about. I assure you that it's there. But those kinds of things, is that like stuff you sprinkle on the top? Like you're about to wrap up this song. Everything's there. And you say, we're going to do a final listen down. Hey, it might be cool to put a little harmonic and sprinkle something on this last chorus. Do you find yourself doing things like that?
Oh, you're talking about the bing, boom, like that?
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay.
So yeah, sometimes that won't be there, like when the drums are tracked or something, or sometimes it is. I think in this instance it might not have been, but Brandon maybe put that like fill in there that made a spot that seemed different than like, okay, we don't just strum through this because Brandon did something, now our drummer. So then we would get tracking like the real guitars after the scratch. We just like, we hit it, but I don't think we ever like finished the song and then we're like, all right, let's go back and do the harmonic. I think that was one of those things where once you heard the final drum take, you're like, oh, this is what I do. And it's, you know, just like clear as day.
And I've had that happen. So I've done a guitar take and like in the middle of it, I'll mess up a chord. And at the end of it, I'll just go doo doo, like a harmonic or something, just out of nowhere, not thinking about it. And later on, I'll get a mix back and that harmonic's there. I'm like, what is that? You know, and they snuck it in there from a take or whoever, you know, they edited the guitars, they left that in there. And sometimes those little surprises are really cool. Again, chorus three, the octave guitars here are way louder in the mix. The whole chorus sounds bigger, more urgent, again, because of that tambourine. And then we get into a 15-bar outro. This part is the pre-chorus with the guitar lick hook. The hi-hat synth is louder in the mix here, panned off right on bar 4 and bar 12. Again, on the same bars in this section, but that synth part is louder. It's whatever it is. I'm saying synth. It sounds like a hi-hat, but like almost like an MP3 hi-hat sound. It's got like a little bit of computery crispiness going on to it or something. But I love that little flourish. You're going to have to go back and listen to it. You know what the heck I'm talking about, Chris.
Yeah. He's jumping class. Keep your beer to the glass, won't be.
Sounds like a different vocal take here. It's a little more aggro on Eavesdrop in Class, Keep Your Ear to the Glass, Woe's Me. And a lot of times when we're recording in Pro Tools, we'll just copy and paste. Do you try to keep takes and choruses different? Is that something that you're mindful of?
Yeah, we try not to do like the copy and paste if it's the same part, so that every chorus is, you know, just a little different. Brett would have some more insight on that, but I think even sometimes too, like maybe we'll like take the double from the chorus before and put it and then like sing the new lead and stuff like that, you know, less load if it's something that's buried, but we try not to just be like, all right, same chorus.
Gotcha. Well, on the last line, woe is me, it doesn't resolve on the root note as it ends on that 15th bar. And my last question, and I rewound this part, Chris, I don't know how many times I listened to it soft, medium. I listened to it where my ears are bleeding in headphones. Then I put my studio speakers on, okay? Even listened to it in my car. Is there a cowbell buried in the mix here? Or what am I hearing?
Fuck yeah, there is. You're absolutely right.
Okay. I'm like, is this for real? They put a cowbell in? But it's awesome. You could barely hear it, but like, I'm like, what the heck is that? I'm thinking maybe there's like a delay on some instrument that's like, you know, giving me a slap back here. Whose idea was that? And I guarantee that wasn't on the demo, right?
No, that was not on the demo. I think that might have been Brett or Brandon's idea. I know it. That definitely wasn't my idea.
All of a sudden, it turned into like butt rock Lynyrd Skynyrd for a second, but I'm digging it, man. I'm a Florida guy. You can't scare me with some Skynyrd.
Yeah, we did a couple like interesting moves on that record, and this was one of them that I'm really stoked on.
Well, the old man's ears are still working. I picked out the cowbell here, and listen, I want to thank you for sitting in. I'm proud of you guys. I'm really stoked for you. I think the world is yours right now. Keep doing whatever you're doing. You have a new record out that was released this year in 2023 called Why Would I Watch? And what else is coming up with the band, man? Leave the listeners with what you have going on.
Yeah, so when this interview comes out, I would say in about 2 weeks, we're starting our Why Would I Watch U.S. headlining tour with support from Heart Attack Man, Spanish Love Songs, and Ben Quad. Then we got Australian leg of the tour with our friends at Free Throw coming up. And then we're supporting Fall Out Boy and Jimmy Eat World in the U.S. And then there's more stuff I can't talk about yet, but coming up after that.
Perfect, man. Well, hey, thank you so much. And to all the guys, I said hello, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me, dude. So when the drinks have dried up, a concrete basement, now you won't face me. I don't remember what I said. Am I the problem? Stay down, stay down, stay down.
Hey, I hope you all enjoyed that conversation with Chris Freeman, but don't go anywhere. We got the band you might not know. We got the rap segment. We got lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Chris to Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Game Time, a pop punk band from Kansas City, Missouri, featuring Nick Pickrell on bass and vocals, Kyle Devlin on guitar and vocals, and Gabe on the drums. You can find them on Instagram at GameTime_KC. Here's a snippet of their song, The Stories We Tell Ourselves.
Time to grow. Our values dictate what we're locked in. Learn to live and let go. Take a breath and let it out.
Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So Chris, this was a fun episode. One of the things that Chris talked about, which I thought was really interesting, is that they had this restraint in a song that was relatively earlier in their career. And I know exactly what you're talking about when you're saying everyone, especially when you're in like a punk rock band or a punk rock adjacent band, everyone just wants to play and wants to play loud all the time. We did that. Everybody does that. And most bands don't really understand dynamics yet,
right,
when you're younger. But man, it adds so much when you're able to hold back some of the things about rock music that can make it exciting. Because if you don't, those things that are exciting, the loudness, the ripping parts, they get boring. They become like wallpaper if you don't have those dynamics.
Absolutely. And, you know, a band like mine, there was no thought of that. And then add in that we had, you know, at one time, three horn players. Everyone wants to play at the same time. I need to be louder. I can't hear myself here. But to your point, those dynamics, you know, the only way to make something sound soft is to have the part before it be louder, and vice versa. You have to have those peaks and valleys. And, yep, and those are hard to do when you're a young songwriter.
Yeah, you don't understand. I mean, sometimes there are bands, I don't know, in the world of like hardcore and metal and stuff that I can't get into because I'm like, this is just loud and screaming the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, where's the dynamics? It just sounds all the same to me. And that's such an important aspect of music for me to enjoy anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm not everybody. Everyone has their own taste. But I think that's really important. And I think it can make a part that's ripping and heavy sound 10 times bigger if it's coming from something that's not there yet, mm-hmm. you know? So I thought that was a cool thing to talk about. Hey, man, I absolutely love tambourine. You guys brought up the subject of tambourine.
Oh, yeah.
I think it adds something so cool to a song. I think the Gin Blossoms use it perfectly all the time in their songs. The Gin Blossoms really made me love tambourine, but I just love it in general. You guys have used tambourine in some Less Than Jake songs, right?
On many songs, absolutely. Yeah. You kind of have to have it in there, and it's one of those things. Tambourine's really interesting. It's either tucked in the mix where it's just kind of there, or it's really loud. Rarely, if ever, do you hear a tambourine that's inaudible almost. It's there. There'd be no reason for it, in my opinion, you know. But you know, kind of there or loud is where a tambourine. It just keeps the song moving, especially in this one. You know, you get to that bridge part where it comes in and it rocks through the rest of the song, so that when you get to chorus three, it just inherently sounds faster. But it's not. It's the same tempo. It just gives it that urgency.
I think a lot of times the listener doesn't realize they're hearing that particular percussion, be it tambourine or shakers or whatever, but it just adds a feel that you can't really describe. But then take it away, take it out of that same song, and you miss it so badly.
Right. Well, and I've never talked about this before. I'm going to give away, I don't know if it's a secret, but how I break down these songs. You would drive yourself nuts if you got into a bridge and you're like trying to discern everything that's going on in these 16 bars, you know, which ends up being like whatever, 38 seconds of time or 28 seconds of time, whatever it ends up being. You drive yourself nuts. You have to literally go in and go, okay, I'm only listening at the tambourine for this many bars. That's all I listen to. Go, okay, the tambourine's there the whole time. Where's the octave guitar? Yeah. Oh, the octave's there the whole time. Or the octave stops after this many bars. Oh, it's only off to the right. You know, you have to do one thing at a time. And I definitely zone in on that tambourine. I love its placement in the song.
I never really thought about you when you're preparing for the episode, listening to a part of a song just to listen to that, to focus in on that one thing. I don't really think about it too much, and I produce the show. I'm sure the listeners aren't thinking about it too much. When I listen to a song, I'm listening to everything at once, but you are zoning in on one thing at a time, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I ultimately listen to the song as everybody does, as a full cohesive idea of everything in the pot, in the mix. But when you're analyzing it under the microscope, like we do here on the show, you have to listen to one thing at a time when you start getting into the sections. Otherwise, you'd never be able. I mean, you get a song like Every Time I Die when we had Keith on here. You can't listen to that as a full idea and try to describe what you just heard.
Yeah. There are things out there which maybe 5 years down the line, if these things come along, although I'm sure they're already well along as it is, but that take out certain aspects. Like, I didn't know about this. There's a thing that can take the vocals out of any song for like karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's not going to work that well. That's going to be pretty shitty or whatever. But then I heard it. I think my friend PJ showed me it. I'm like, oh, it does it like perfectly. That might be a useful thing in the future if you could take out one element of every song and just solo it like you're at the board or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would make the job a lot easier. However, that wouldn't be the same in my opinion of what we do here, because you have to hear how those tones and individual parts are intertwined together in the mix. That's what makes them work. If you solo them out, then it's like, okay, but I think the magic's in the mix. And speaking of the mix, Chris, can we talk about the cowbell that I thought I heard?
Yeah, nice catch on that.
The look on his face. I'm like, either he's really perplexed and he just busts out in this huge ear-to-ear grin. You know, he's like, yeah, there's a cowbell there. So weird.
It's hard to deny a cowbell, man. That's been a recipe for a hit song for a long time.
That's right. Well, hey, we're not going to ask you for more cowbell, but we are going to ask you to join our Patreon, which is called Supporting Cast, over at Chris. ChristaMakes.com. Head over there and you can sign up and get bonus episodes each week of what we call the after party, where Chris and I sit here and talk even more for your listening pleasure. ChristaMakes.com, for the price of a cup of coffee at the Shell gas station in Romney, North Carolina, you can support the podcast you know and love.
Wow. That's very specific.
I don't even know if there's a Romney, North Carolina. I made that up, Chris.
But were you thinking of Mitt Romney?
I don't think he's from North Carolina. No, I wasn't. No. I just made up.
You know what's really funny? Less than Jake, did you guys play at Duquesne University when I went there? Or maybe you played right after I went there?
That sounds very familiar. Duquesne, yes.
That's where I went to college. And what's so funny when you said Romney... whatever year that was, I think that was the presidential election.
Okay.
Where Mitt Romney was in it. So that was after I graduated college. But I think you guys played there. But you made a joke on stage about somebody's jeans looking like Mitt Romney's jeans. I remember that, which I think is so funny. And it's amazing that I still remember that. That's when I only knew you from touring, not like I did now, but it just brought back a memory. Anyway, yeah, supporting cast stuff. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
ChristaMakes.com. If you want to hear us talk about Mitt Romney's jeans or other things like that.
And that's Mitt Romney's J-E-A-N-S, right? Not G-E-N-E-S.
No,
right?
No, not his genetics. I do think he has a lot of sons. Does he have a whole bunch of sons? I'm pretty sure.
I don't know, but
I think he does.
Fair enough. Never thought we'd talk about old Mitt on the show, but we just did.
Old Mitt.
But hey, give me a follow on Instagram at Less Than Chris D. Give Chris a follow at Less, not Less Than Chris Fafalius.
Should I get Less Than Chris F?
Give Chris Fafalius a follow on Instagram as well. I want to thank this week's guest, Chris Freeman, for sitting in the hot seat, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, Chris Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafalius here. You may have heard me talk about my band Punchline before. Maybe you already know us, or maybe you're hearing about us for the first time right now. It doesn't matter. No matter what your relationship with Punchline is, I will absolutely guarantee that you'll love our new podcast, A Band Called Punchline. Starting with our humble beginnings in a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania in 1997, we're telling the hilarious, strange, and hopefully inspiring story of the 25 plus years of our band in the most honest way possible, podcast style. A Band Called Punchline is an audio documentary available now wherever you get your pods. So subscribe and let me and my friends share a wild, entertaining, unique, and wonderful tale of music and perseverance unlike any other that's still being written today.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.